Support for the Exchange Podcast from NHPR comes from you, our listeners,
and from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Maine's the oldest state in the nation, and New Hampshire is next in line with a median age of 43. And so the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services right now is seeking public input on what elders here want and need. The department's just kicked off a series of listening sessions all over the state. It's an important first step in writing its official state plan on aging, a document with a fundamental goal to better support seniors so they can participate fully in their communities. Today in The Exchange, where is New Hampshire doing well for its older citizens and where is it falling short? What do you think? If you're an elderly person or soon approaching that category, what's lacking here in the Granite State? We love your thoughts. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or call in 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Chris Santinello, Director of the Division of Long-Term Supports and Services at DHHS. And Chris, welcome back. Good to see you.
Great. Thank you.
Also with us, Wendy Altman, Bureau Chief for the Bureau of Elderly and Adult Services at DHHS. Wendy, welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Also with us, Roberta Baker, reporter for the Union Leader, where she writes about aging for the Silver Linings series. Roberta, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And also with us, Doug McNutt, Associate State Director of Advocacy for AARP New Hampshire. And Doug, welcome back. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Well, all of you, but I think you first, Wendy. What is it that you better want to understand through these listening sessions? What do you hope to hear from people?
So we've planned 13 listening sessions all around the state. They're community-based. We want to hear from people in their local community. We want to know more about understanding what's important to them as they age or they plan to age. And we want to hear about some of the local needs and supports that they're looking for so that we can be an advocate for them and speak to some of the things that are coming up during the listening sessions.
Now, the state has always had a state plan on aging. It's a federal requirement. But what sort of new things do you hope to hear? What sort of ideas are you wanting more information on?
Well, historically, I've been working for the department and the Bureau for 20 years, so I've been through a few processes with the state plan. And some things that come out of the planning process really are to look at our vision for the future for aging and planning to age. And there's always surprises, and things evolve. So we're looking at sort of putting the stereotypes around aging in check. For example, we were in Berlin last Thursday, and many people use the internet and social media to get their information. And, you know, when you speak to providers and community members, that's not always the first thing people think of when they think about how people want to get information. So we know that we need to evolve and use the tools that we have now to get information out to people. And we want to use these listening sessions to sort of discover some of the new things that we can be thinking about.
Well, it's interesting. So you come to the meeting with a preconceived notion. Maybe senior citizens will complain about healthcare access or the cost of prescription drugs. And maybe they complain about that. But maybe they also say, you know, we could use better internet access.
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened when we were in Berlin. There were more than 50 individuals of all age ranges really thinking about things from isolation and continuing home-delivered meals and the importance of that work in the community, as well as learning more about how to utilize social media and getting education around it, because that's how their family wants to connect with them and their community wants to connect with them, and looking for the resources to be able to do that. In addition to that, there were things related to building access at the city hall or at the bank.
Like just getting in.
Just getting in. You know, there's a ramp to the building, but no electronic door. And if I need access to the building, I'm having difficulty with that. And so it's bringing to light some of those things that they maybe don't always get an opportunity to talk about.
Well, it's interesting, and it's a pretty hefty schedule. As you said, you started in Berlin just last week. There's a dozen other cities. If you want to know where these listening sessions are taking place and when, go to our website, nhpr.org/exchange. There's a ton of information there about these listening sessions. And Chris, is this the first time that you guys have done this, held this pretty packed schedule of statewide public input sessions?
I think we've always, within the Bureau of Elderly and Adult Services, had some form of listening sessions, but it hasn't been. The last time the Bureau of Elderly and Adult Services led these was in 2009. And so we are really excited to take this opportunity. We've recently, Wendy's been hired as the Bureau Chief within the last year. And so the Department of Health and Human Services has really put an effort on what are the supports we need through our Bureau of Elderly and Adult Services. And I think for a long time, the department and the legislature was planning to have some of our services involved in managed care. And that went away in this past summer under House Bill 1816 when that was signed into law.
And so a lot has changed.
A lot has changed. And so now we're saying, okay, what should the future of our service delivery system look like? And working together through the state plan on aging and listening sessions, we're able to get information from the individuals who we're serving today, who we may be serving, family members. What should our system look like in the future, and really use this as an opportunity?
So interesting. So who are we serving now, and who may we be
Correct.
Serving, you know, 10, 15 years from now?
And that also includes family members, right? So you may be an adult child and your parents aging. And so how do we engage some of those people in our planning and our vision?
The so-called sandwich generation. Yeah, real quick to you, Wendy.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that that's part of the discussion that we have and plan to have at these listening sessions. I myself represent the median age here in New Hampshire. So
median age of 43.
Of 43. And I'm part of that sandwich generation. It's personal to me. You know, I have children in the school system. I have parents who are retired. I have grandparents. And, you know, I think that it's important to look at how we plan to age and what we want it to look like for ourselves and for our parents. And the people who attend these listening sessions, I want to broaden that vision, you know, that we're looking to improve how we serve older adults, but we need to also be looking to plan to age as well.
Well, that's interesting and perfect segue again for me to remind our listeners that you should join us now. We're talking about aging in the Granite State as the state gets ready to draft its new state plan on aging. The Department of Health and Human Services is holding a bunch of listening sessions around the state to understand the needs of older adults, and as Wendy said, those who are getting older, helping to care for an older family member, planning for their own senior years, if we could put it that way. Join us with your questions and comments. Where do you think New Hampshire and its communities do well by its older population, and where does it do less well? We'd love to hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Doug, you've been in this field for a long time. You work for the state. Now you're with AARP. What do you think the state needs to hear from its older citizens? What more information is needed? I'm struck by what Wendy says, for example, that, you know, we have preconceived notions and some of them are not right.
Well, I think these listening sessions are hugely important because I can think of over 20 years ago when we had discussions, listening sessions when I was with the state, and I'm 20 years above the median age myself. So in any event, one of the things that people said to us was, you know, this system is so fragmented and so hard to navigate. What we really need is some place we can go and get information and help and figure out what we need to do. That is the genesis of what we now call ServiceLink, which has evolved over 20 years and has improved and has done more things. And Wendy has been very active in helping that network improve. But it's written to show that listening sessions generated that. That did not come from the state. It wasn't something we decided. It's like people said to us, you know, we really need help.
Give me one-stop shopping.
Give
it's
me
too
a
confusing.
Place to go. And there was legislation passed. And 20 years later, we have what I think is a really unique network. And I will say one other thing, and that is that AARP has done sort of a survey, a scorecard of what kinds of things are working. And across the country, our service link network is considered to be one of the top two or three in the whole country. So that's really a kind of a great example of what can happen.
So who knows what will trickle up from these 13 listening sessions. And just quickly remind us, so what is ServiceLink? What makes it so cool?
ServiceLink is a one-stop shop. Every county has at least one. Several counties have a couple. And what it is a place where you can go if you're aged or you have you're an adult with a disability and get help. You can find out about referrals. You can apply for Medicaid. You can answer a Social Security question. Two of the really great service link are Medicare counseling. We're right in the middle of open enrollment right now, and so there's a lot of work going on with that. And the other thing that I think is really unique is the caregiving component. And again, Wendy's been very influential with that. There are funds for people to get respite care. And the other thing is there's a caregiver assessment person at each service link that can help you figure out how to navigate the system as a caregiver. Now, that isn't as the family member, but the caregivers really need help as well. And that's one of the unique things about ServiceLink is they also provide that level of support.
Well, and sometimes the caregivers are also older persons themselves taking care of spouses and so forth. And Roberta, I want to bring you in as well. As you do your reporting at the Union Leader, again, you've been writing for the Silver Linings series. What complaints do you hear again and again from older folks about what isn't going so well for them in the state? What do they say they want?
I think they feel strongly that they need better access to information. There's so much out there in New Hampshire. We're a network of incredible, almost like cottage industries of providing for people's needs. There are some very dynamic nonprofits who are they're very lean in their organization. They are there. Everyone working for the organization is somehow involved in helping seniors, and they're very effective. I can think of two offhand that that really strike me as standouts. I do take calls every once in a while from seniors who are complaining about transportation, and oddly enough, I hear it also in the city, in Manchester, when they don't realize that they can get a bus or I really need help, I need somebody to pick me up. But actually around the state, there's an incredible network of transportation providers. One that stands out in my mind is Interlakes Community Caregivers, which started about 20 years ago in a congregational church in Center Harbor and now is incredibly effective. They've got a very well-trained force of volunteers who concentrate on transportation, and they'll take somebody to an appointment in Boston if they need
it. Wow.
And the service is actually it's all integrated online, so they can call in, say what they need. It's entered in there in the database. It's live so that the volunteers can look and check the website and say, oh, I can pick this person up and take them
to
Hanover.
It's kind of like a free Uber for senior citizens.
Exactly. And they just click. It's arranged. They show up. And it's just a very smooth operation. And the thing that also stands out about that is it's so heavily funded by private donations. Grants from local banks, and they do have a lot of fundraising that they do.
So the complaint you hear is, I need transportation, and maybe people just don't realize, Roberta, that transportation exists. Is that what you're saying?
They don't realize it exists, and I think one of the things that would be helpful is talking about seniors saying that they would like a better internet service. Well, maybe there can be an online clearinghouse just for seniors. Okay, click on this transportation, look around the state. Where do you live? What's there? What serves your area? And even if you're not actually right in the town where the transportation network is located, often those volunteers will go help. So it's there. It's just people have – there's a disconnect between thinking about what you need, your needs at the moment and where do I go and how do I find out what's in my area, especially in rural areas.
Sure. Well, that kind of sounds like Service Link, though, Doug, right? I mean, isn't that happening already? I can see it's, you want to jump in too, Chris. Go ahead,
Service
Doug.
Service Link is great.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of the issue with Service Link is they don't have a budget to do marketing, and that's one of the reasons why I'm sort of a proselytizer. I want to tell people about Service Link because oftentimes they don't know. But when they do, I mean, you can go there for almost anything. And typically, people ask me questions. There are a lot of things I know. I often say, or refer them to Service Link, even if I know the answer to the question, because
just
I really
so they
believe
can
that.
Experience it.
Well, there'll be one more question. I mean, I seldom find somebody who really only has one question. They'll almost always have several more. And if they're in the right place, it is so much more helpful for them.
Go ahead, Chris.
So I think Doug and Roberta raised some really good points. And yes, the services are fragmented through the Bureau of Elderly and Adult Services. And Wendy and I know that. Doug knows that. Lots of people know that. And we are looking to just the best way to provide those services. And I think one of the things Roberta mentioned that's really helpful in our discussions is, so transportation is an issue, but the Interlakes area has figured out a resource. And so what we want to find out, instead of the state coming down and saying, this is what all Service Links must do, this is what each community must do, is through our sessions, listen to what are the strengths, what are the natural resources of each community, as well as the needs. So we can design services that meet the needs of those particular communities.
Well, it's like what Doug said at the outset, that, mm-hmm. you know, these listening sessions are partly about a lot about actually trickling up,
correct.
Ideas bubbling
mm-hmm.
up that you guys might not have thought of. Again, the number for you to join us with your comments, questions, thoughts on this, 1-800-892-6477. If you're an older citizen yourself or looking forward to becoming an older citizen, or you take care of someone who's older, what's your chief frustration with what's available for older people here in the Granite State? We've heard, for example, about transportation. What else would you add to that list? Again, we'd love to hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Andy sent us an email. He says, given the chronic and significant budget challenges faced by DHHS, would it be appropriate, after listening to what everyone wants, to ask them how much more in taxes they are and would have been willing to pay in order to see these services themselves? Andy, thank you so much for the email. Doug, do you want to jump in? You're sort of our advocate person.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, I will say that this is an issue that we've been struggling with for years. And one of the problems over the last, since I've been involved with this issue, is the inability for us to have invested in home and community-based services, which is really the primary weakness that we have. And I will say that there's been some progress. I mean, the governor in his last budget did raise some rates for home and community-based services, and for that we're thankful. But that isn't the end of it. We really need to do more. We need to make sure that those services are available, because if we don't, we're going to really be stuck. We have an aging population. We have nursing homes that are probably pretty full at the moment. And the last thing we want to do is to have to build more facilities. It's not what people want. It's not what's effective and cost efficient in the long run either.
Well, and this gets into a lot of the reporting that Roberta has done, and that is on workforce shortages to staff some of these nursing homes, but also, as you said, Doug, to keep people in their homes to provide that kind of care. So we'll talk about that after a short break. And I can see everybody wants to jump in, so we've got a lot more to talk about in just a moment. You can join us too. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the state of New Hampshire has just kicked off an extensive series of listening sessions as it develops a new plan on aging. It's asking, what services does our older population want and need? And where do communities do well? Where do they fall short when it comes to those services? There's an extensive list of places that are holding these listening sessions. They just began last week. You can go to our website if you want to find out more. It's nhpr.org/exchange. You can also give us a call now, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Wendy Altman, just before the break, I could see you wanted to jump in on this big conversation that we're having, so go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to add to what Doug was saying, and one of the things that I would envision finding out during these listening sessions are, what are some of those natural supports that are working in communities that maybe aren't necessarily publicly funded, but are resource-rich in, you know, the grassroots community coming around to support an age-friendly community. And looking
can you
at
give us an example of what you're talking about?
So for example, the transportation solutions that we're seeing, some of the caregiver supports that we're seeing in different communities, the Village Network, the Alliance for Healthy Aging group has been, you know, discovering what age-friendly communities would look like, and really starting to start planning for what their communities want to look like in the future. Also, planning commissions around the state are working towards this area and engaging with their communities around this topic. And we can leverage that information in our state plan in addition to doing the listening sessions. And I also wanted to say that I think it's important for us to be working towards, as we plan, looking at how we may pay for our long-term care.
Well,
and
it gets
stretching
to our
dollars.
Emailer's question. Yeah. Right. So as we talk about this whole, you know, system of services, obviously we have the DHHS, the Bureau of Elderly and Adult Services, but it's not just that, right? I mean, there's community groups, there's AARP. So when we say, Chris, I'll turn to you, the system of adult services, I mean, who is that? And who's responsible for it, by the way? I mean, the state can't take care of everybody.
Right. And I think that's where we need to look at partnering with our local communities and determining, okay, in those communities that are age-friendly, what are the supports that the state needs to provide to supplant some of those existing services and not take over what exists naturally for a family and in a community? And how do our services best support a family to care for their family member, to have a family member utilizes the resources of their friends, neighbors, faith communities? And how do we best support our efforts to enhance that? And we're looking at lots of different ways within the Bureau of Elderly and Adult Services to look at having our rules be more flexible, having our funding streams respond to the needs we see today and that we will see in the future.
Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, and AARP is working on an age-friendly initiative, and we've got several communities around the state that are joining that. And the thing about that is an opportunity for a community to decide what they need. You know, is transportation their main issue? Do they want to make sure they have a walkable downtown? Do they want to make sure that they have appropriate caregivers? And Portsmouth has signed up and Goffstown, and we've worked with the entire Southern New Hampshire Planning Commission. The White Mountain region around Conway is involved in this. So this is really bubbling up, as I say, from the community.
I think we did a program a while back on how age-friendly communities actually satisfy a lot of what the millennial generation supposedly
yes.
wants as well, walkable public transit.
Absolutely.
And so forth.
My daughter lives in Portsmouth, and if she could live without a car, she'd be happy.
Sure. Well, again, you can join us with your comments and questions. 1-800-892-6477. What do older Granite Staters need? Where does the state and its communities do well? Where do they fall short when it comes to meeting the needs of older citizens? Again, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. So, Roberta, earlier Doug talked about a real shortage of caregivers in the state. And, you know, there's a workforce shortage in no matter what industry you talk about. But what have you seen in your reporting in terms of a elder caregiver worker shortage?
It's ongoing. It's getting worse. There are several factors that are complicating the landscape in New Hampshire. There's a lot of competition from retail and any sort of service job that could be potentially more well-paying, even fast food, so that if somebody has a heart for caregiving, they might start out in it and think it's wonderful, but it's so emotionally and physically demanding that they'll get to the point where, oh my gosh, you know, maybe I can make $15 an hour if I work at a fast food place or work as a toll collector. And I just won't, I'll have better benefits. I won't get so burned out. So I think that the challenge is to bring new people in, to make them to make them feel valued in what they do and attract them to that profession as potentially a long-term career. Okay, you may start out as a nurse's aide, but there are many options for continuing on, and you can get scholarships and help from individual nursing homes to continue your education to become an LPN or an RN. So it's really not a closed door there. I think we just have to value that more. We really do.
Why is the pay so low? Somebody can make more as a toll collector or working at Target, I think, is increasing its wages to $15 an hour. So why is the pay so low, Roberta? And is that
again,
the number? Yeah, go ahead.
Again, that's complicated. It's easy to point to Medicaid reimbursement rates as a problem. In New Hampshire, we are about the second lowest in the country right now. And it would be helpful if that could go up slightly and be dedicated to increasing wages for nurses' aides and other caregivers. Beyond that, I don't know. I think nursing homes always struggle financially to provide the range of services needed. Out in the community, it can get very expensive for people. There's a big disconnect between what a caregiver earns and what someone will pay for that in-home care.
Sure,
the person paying pays a lot more and says, $26 an hour, what are they complaining about?
Right.
But there's administrative costs, there's health insurance, there's all these things that make up the difference between the $10 to $13 an hour or $14 an hour and $26.
I see.
So
It's not like what it looks like on paper.
No, it isn't.
Did you want to jump in, Chris?
I think we do need to look at rates, but rates are only one piece of the puzzle because we still have demographic trends that are impacting New Hampshire. And so we need to think about beyond the rates, how can we bring more workers to the workforce? And I know I want Doug to chime in because I know AARP is really looking at how do we take advantage and some of our older workers who may be retired but are looking for a second career with value and purpose. And can we engage some of those individuals to help us with the workforce? Also, some of the things we're working on through the Bureau of Elderly and Adult Services and within the department is how do we provide supports to families and caregivers so individuals can stay at home for as long as possible, as well as adjusting some of our services. We've recently added the dollar amount you can have to do a modification to your home so someone can stay at home longer if they need a modification. So what supports do we need to put in place to enhance people to stay at home for as long as
possible?
Because
that's the goal, right?
That would be the goal, absolutely.
Roberta?
I've run into some really good initiatives that are not very expensive for communities to do. And one of the things that would be very helpful is if there could be greater sharing between communities of ideas and ways to make these things work. There are two things that really stand out. RSVP and Southern New Hampshire Services has a fix-it program. Older, they don't even have to be retired. Many of them are, but people who are handy or retired contractors will volunteer their services to go and make repairs in someone's home.
That's great.
It's terrific. They can put in ramps. They can fix plumbing issues. They can do basic maintenance. They certainly can't upgrade a home, but they'll do basic maintenance to keep things going. And that's a very popular service, and that program's always looking for volunteers. That could be offered around the state more than it is. Another thing that's that's spreading slowly and consistently out in the Upper Valley, the Upper Valley Community Nurses Program has what's traditionally called parish nurses, a nurse that will go out in the community, see what the needs are, almost perform wellness checks. And this is very important because when someone leaves the hospital after surgery or rehabilitation, they're followed by visiting nurses typically, which do a wonderful
yeah,
job.
A couple weeks.
But insurance only covers for so long.
Sure.
And then they're left. They're alone in their house. What do they do? They're not that much better. This is where a community or a parish nurse comes in. And they can be, this program can be subsidized sometimes by taxpayers, certainly not always. Largely, it's through private donations.
A lot
and
of these
grants.
Are nonprofits.
Yeah, and grants and donations subsidize these. Hanover now has a town nurse who
wow.
goes out.
Again, I want to remind our listeners that you can join us. And Doug, I know you want to jump into our number here in the exchange. For you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. As the state kicks off this big series of listening sessions to better understand the needs of older adults here in the Granite State, we're asking what you think. What's New Hampshire doing well for older generations? What could be improved? What's lacking for older people in our communities? Again, the number is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We talked about transportation earlier. Don sent us an email. He says, I'm a driver educator and I work with older drivers. At times, I'm able to help them stay on the road. But often, Don says, I need to give them the bad news that driving is not safe and they should retire from driving. As our population ages, the need for community mobility must be addressed. Don, thank you. And we did talk about that. Ray in Dalton says, in business, the most important road to success is location, location, location. Ray says, for senior citizens, the most important issue is healthcare, healthcare, healthcare. Ray, thank you very much for that. And what do you think about that, Doug, the idea that, you know, it's all about the healthcare?
Well, that's certainly the primary issue. As people age, they want to make sure they have adequate health care and they have access to it. And it's clearly why we really want to try to do what we can to promote community efforts to help people stay healthy. Roberta talked about some of these volunteer programs. There are some volunteer programs called the Senior Companion Program. There's also, through the RSVP program, certain parts of the state to provide free transportation, help people in their homes. Those are the kinds of things we really have to work on. And there's communities. Wendy earlier mentioned the Village program. We talked about some of these nursing programs. There are other communities in the state that have nurses that go out. These are the sorts of programs that are bubbling up that I think are critical, which is not to say that we don't continue to need the support of the basic state programs. We also think that there, I just want to touch on the older worker thing real quickly. There's a lot of opportunity for people to, between the ages of particularly 65 and 75, to reenter the workforce. I was on
Sure, because we're hearing about workforce shortages in those critical home care jobs and so forth. Go ahead.
I was on a program with a gentleman who was retired from his first career who was working as a caregiver and really enjoyed it and found tremendous fulfillment in it. And probably he didn't need to make as much money as somebody who was in their first career, but it was an option for him. He wanted to stay involved. He wanted to make some money. And I think those opportunities are available, especially the last thing I would say is older workers, it isn't just an option for some of them. A lot of them need to work. We know that the savings rate among some people is very, very low. So they're not going to be able to retire in the traditional way anyway. And the question is, how do we leverage their need and their support to be able to help us do the things we need to do?
Well, I had a guy bag my groceries at the grocery store last week who was, no kidding, 82 years old. And I said to him, are you doing this because you want to get out or because you need the money? And he said, it's about the money. I need to put gas in my car, he said. So, wow, 82 years old. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, and I think what Doug was talking about earlier and as well with you, Laura, about older workers, it also helps older individuals stay connected to their community and avoid social isolation. So someone who has worked up until age 65, always had lots of connections in their workday, now lives in rural New Hampshire and has less social connections. And by keeping people connected, it actually is good for one's mental health, which is impacts one's health care. So it's broader than just filling a workforce need.
Go ahead, Wendy.
Yes, and I'd like to just add, too, that as we think about the transitions that people may go through as they age, such as losing their independence in terms of driving or thinking about how they access healthcare, a lot of these things we do expect to come up during the listening sessions, and we want to sort of hear what some of those experiences are for people. I would also add that healthcare is very important, and it's part of the discussion. It's one of the central things that we that do come up in terms of what's working and what isn't working. But very closely tied to that is the social determinants, or the things that help people access that healthcare. And what's really important to us during the state plan on aging process is to be thinking about those elements as well.
What do you mean by that? Social determinants that determine whether someone can access healthcare. What
so
does that mean?
Things such as, how do I get to my healthcare provider?
Transportation again.
How do I access that? Where do I get information to learn more about how to prevent certain conditions or maintain my chronic condition, whether that's diabetes or looking at oral health, nutrition services, those things that meet the basic needs for that individual, and making sure that they have access to that and if they need help with accessing those things. And the Older Americans Act funding really is there to help support vulnerable individuals in terms of accessing those services. And we want to make sure that we're partnering with different areas of the department, such as the Division of Public Health and the work they do around healthy aging. And the discussions and programs that we have with them can help integrate or help with our programming in terms of planning for aging and the work that we do. It can really complement the work that we're doing with these listening sessions.
Well, and you mentioned the Older Americans Act. That's what this is all about, right? There's funding from the federal Older Americans Act, but you can't get the funding unless you have a, you know, on paper, viable state plan on aging. So that's where this
Correct.
Comes from.
Yep.
Okay. I can see you want to jump in real quick, Chris. Go ahead.
I just think one of the things, and to highlight what Wendy talked about, is we really are at the department looking at whole person, whole family, whole community care, and how is what we are doing, whether it's in the Bureau of Elderly and Adult Services, whether it's in our division, whether it's in the department, how do we integrate across a whole family, whole community to provide comprehensive services and support?
Well, let's talk about the family piece of this, because I think that's really important. So we'll pick up on that after a short break, and we'll keep taking your emails, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or, of course, you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477.
Amanda from Barrington turned her Mini Cooper into Morning Edition.
I'm Rick Ganley with David Green and Steve Inskeep.
Vicky from Hudson turned her Audi into the news from Audi.
Published in the Journal of the American Medical Association.
And Greg from Dover turned his Porsche into laughs with Peter.
You actually found something more evil to do. I think that's great.
Before you trade in your vehicle, consider the value it'll bring to supporting your favorite programs on NHPR. Learn more at nhpr.org/cardonation.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, author and UNH professor Tom Haines on his quest to close the gap between energy consumption and production. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. This hour, what do senior citizens and soon-to-be senior citizens want and need in order to thrive in the Granite State, to contribute to their communities? What do you think? Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800- 892-6477. We're talking about this because the state has just kicked off an extensive series of listening sessions to understand the needs of older adults as it prepares for its official state plan on aging. So again, we're asking what you think, where New Hampshire's doing well for older generations, what could be improved. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. We have four guests. Doug McNutt is here, Associate State Director of Advocacy for AARP New Hampshire. Roberta Baker, reporter for the Union Leader, where she writes about aging for the Silver Linings series. Wendy Altman is here, Bureau Chief for the Bureau of Elderly and Adult Services at DHHS. And Chris Santanello, Director of the Division of Long-Term Supports and Services at DHHS. And just before the break, all of you, Chris mentioned the family issue. And certainly, you know, if seniors are lucky, they've got a family kind of backing them up, trying to figure out what to do. This brings up the so-called sandwich generation that you mentioned earlier, Wendy. So I'd like to ask you, you know, beyond sort of focusing on the individual older person themselves, how are you hoping to better integrate the family?
So I think that it's just bringing to light that there is a family network for individuals. That's not necessarily the case for every person who's aging. Some have more of a support system than others. But we do recognize that in that whole person approach and in customizing how we provide services to individuals, that families can be very important to them in their support system. They sometimes provide the majority of the care for individuals, whether that's children, grandchildren, and so on, families, friends, neighbors. So we have to take into consideration what that circle of support is for that individual and how that works. And are there any needs or gaps around that we can help with?
Well, some of that's not within your control, though, right? I mean, some people would say, yeah, I could help out my dad more if I could get some time off of work. But that's not really something that your bureau can help with.
Sure. But I think we need to be part of the discussion and part of advocating for what we're seeing in terms of needs.
What are you seeing?
So for me personally, and for others who are my age, I do see a lot of people who are beginning to think about what's going to happen in 10 years and how do I plan for that in terms of aging parents, aging grandparents, and how that might impact my daily life, my work, and be thinking about if I'm thinking of it and it may impact my life, how it may impact others. And just having the conversation and thinking about it in terms of how do we incorporate some of this into our state plan to say it should be on our radar. We're not necessarily going to solve some of these issues at the listening sessions or within our state plan, but it's starting that conversation and beginning to advocate for it.
So you're really hoping, and I think you said this earlier, Wendy, you're really hoping at these listening sessions that, again, family members will come, not just people of that older generation right now, but family members will come and say, this is what I really need help with. This is what is really lacking for me to do what I want to do by my older loved one.
Yes. And another thing that we're seeing, too, is the need to really have those conversations with employers around being flexible around caregiving and family caregiving and bringing to light some of the needs and conversations that need to happen for their employees, because their employees are valuable to them, but they also need to be able to have that balance.
Let's go back to our listeners. And Mike's calling from Epsom. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Welcome.
And a very good morning, Laura. How are you?
Fine. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. Very shortly, I have retired from a full-time occupation. I spent almost 39 years there. And my health plan covered my wife and myself when I retired at a modest fee. However, what has happened is I have a son. And he's not working, doesn't have an age, still educational. To put him on my health care plan would have been $800 a month, which would have been about, you know, 20-30% of my retirement check. So instead, I have a part-time job where I can purchase my health care for about $200 a month and get a paycheck.
Wow. So you're working to help pay for your son's health care, Mike? Is that what I'm hearing?
That's the long and the short. And I'm not uncertain that there are others in similar situations, grandparents who are taking care of their grandchildren, that type of thing.
Well, Mike, I'm glad you called, and I'm wondering if this is something you hear about a lot, Doug. You know, older adults who are taking care of adult children. Now, I didn't ask Mike this, but sometimes there are situations that come up. We've heard a lot about opioid crisis, for example. Definitely heard a lot about grandparents taking care of kids. So, yeah, that's Mike, that's a heavy load.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to the question without knowing more details. I mean, certainly that was one of the reasons we pushed for Medicaid expansion, which we hoped would help people who would not be eligible for insurance. And my suggestion to him is to check and see, maybe go to ServiceLink and find out if there are any other programs that his son might be eligible for. I mean,
so he wouldn't have to depend on his dad.
Unfortunately, without knowing the details, sure. It's pretty hard to resolve that. I just wanted to touch on a couple of things. Wendy talked about, you talked about family leave, and really that's another issue that we haven't discussed, because family leave has another aspect to it, and that is for somebody taking care of their aging parent or their spouse. Or
we often
child.
Think of it in terms of a baby.
We think of it as, we're taking care of younger people, but it really can be flipped the other way, and that's something that we are working on, and I know that there's a lot of discussion. And there's really, I hope, given, if you followed the gubernatorial election, been a lot of discussion of that. The other thing is that we've done some other legislation on some sort of subsidiary things that are helpful. We passed something called the CARE Act, which allowed caregivers to get information and support when they are taking their loved one home from the hospital. I know that these things are not necessarily the be-all and end-all, but those are the kinds of things that hopefully help caregivers continue to do what they need to do in a reasonable way.
Well, in the Department of Every Little Bit Helps. And since you mentioned ServiceLink, for our caller, Mike, and Mike, good luck to you. And just you mentioned at the beginning of the show, Doug, how important this was, how this was a great idea that was generated from the ground up. Some seniors do not have internet access. So even though I've been saying for resources, for information, go to our website, nhpr.org/exchange. There's a ton there. I know one senior in particular who does not have internet access. I'm not naming names. So can you just give us an easy phone number, Doug, for ServiceLink? Okay, how about you, Wendy? Go ahead.
Yes. So our system of access, ServiceLink, we have 13 locations around the state. So if somebody wants to talk to somebody in person, we do have locations around the state where somebody could walk in or make an appointment. But we do have a national toll-free number, which is 866-634-9412. And that will route individuals to their local ServiceLink office.
Why don't
here
you
in
say
the
that
state.
Again, just for those again for those folks who don't have internet access.
Sure. It's 866-634-9412.
Okay. Thank you again for the call, Mike, and good luck to you. Lots of emails coming in. Angie says, have you been hearing about heavy lifting needs? I see my parents 5 to 7 days a week, Angie says, and bring firewood upstairs and 40-pound bags of pellets for their main heat source, and I lug the bags of dog food up the stairs. Wow. Is there a volunteer organization that provides the heavy lifting for other seniors? This isn't about feeding or bathing or clothing, mostly just heavy lifting. Some people can afford extra help, but most won't ask. Angie, it's a great point. Anybody want to jump in on that? Just help carrying heavy stuff.
That's great. These are things that we expect to hear during listening sessions, and we have heard in the past. Oftentimes, we do make those referrals to the ServiceLink office and the local resource center because there are some natural supports and volunteer networks. And just thinking about some of those options that aren't necessarily funded with public dollars, but are things that the community offers that aren't necessarily something you find in the phone book.
Well, and here's another email to that point from Joanne, who says, if a person is not on state services and say they are over 70 and alone in their home with no family around, where do they go for help with things? Joanne says, is it all income based, such as Meals on Wheels? That is a great question, Joanne. I think there's an impression that If you're low income, you can access all this stuff, but maybe you're of moderate income and you know, you don't qualify on an income scale, but darn it, you'd really like some company. So go ahead, Wendy.
Many of the individuals who are accessing our services that are supported through the Older Americans Act are not income eligible for Medicaid, and they don't receive Medicaid services. So we don't look at the income in terms of what they're making or what they have for resources. They just have a need, and they're 60 and older. So the focus of Older Americans Act funding is to look at that. We also do focus on helping to serve the most vulnerable, so those that we see as isolated or needing supports and services and don't have a support system. We do try to make that a priority, but it is not income-based.
Okay. Thanks for the question, Joanne. I want to get back, Roberta, with you to something that Doug said earlier about families providing caregiving. And from your reporting, you know, you've talked to some people who they're older themselves, and yet they are providing care for a loved one. So what do they say that they need?
They need relief. They need someone to come in and give them some time off just to do something enjoyable, something that doesn't, where they're not absolutely responsible for this, the loved one that they care about constantly, and they want to provide the care. It's not that. It's a matter of exhaustion and time to be yourself, just needing some time away. And I do constantly hear that. And I haven't found I know it's out there, but I haven't reported on what's available just for that. I know there's respite available if you want to take a vacation. But, you know, what if you need, you know, several hours off a week or twice a week?
Well, I think it was one of your stories. I did a lot of reading before the show, as always, but I think it was one of your stories, Roberta, where there was an 82-year-old woman who was caring for her pretty ill 77-year-old husband on the seacoast. She was absolutely exhausted. And you think, 82 years old, wow, that's pretty old to be a full-time caregiver.
Yeah. And she did have a caregiver come into the home to help bathe him and to do the things that that she found difficult. But I think her greatest need was personal time off.
Yeah. Chris, go ahead.
And I think that's one of the things we're working on at the department. New Hampshire has a significant amount of family caregivers, whether it's through elderly and adult services, our developmental services system, our mental health system. And one of the things New Hampshire just received, and we're extremely excited about this, is the opportunity to develop a caregiver policy across the department, because we have lots of grandparents raising grandchildren. We have, parents raising their adult children with disabilities. And how do we develop a policy in the state around supporting caregivers as well as respite across the department to assist those families that are caregivers?
Caregivers across the line.
Across the line.
Whether it's a 40-year-old caring for a 20-year-old adult child who has,
or a grandparent raising their grandchildren because their son or daughter has an opioid addiction or is involved with the Division for Children and Youth and Families. So how do we really support those grandparents who may be aging themselves as well as providing significant supports?
Well, and again, when I read the story that you did, Roberta, about the 82-year-old woman taking care of the 77-year-old husband, it was heartbreaking. She wanted to do it. She wanted to do it, but she was so tired. Go ahead, Wendy.
I just wanted to also add that it's a very personal to people, and it's a personal choice to ask for help. And oftentimes it is a very difficult conversation, and it's very helpful to know that there's places that you can reach out to and who you can trust to look for supports. We want to make sure that we're having that conversation during listening sessions, but also be very respectful that it is a personal choice. And sometimes people are so overwhelmed with that caregiver stress that it's just taking the time to listen.
Yeah,
and not jump to solving problems right away.
We'll get another email from Jay in Lyme, who says New Hampshire's tax structure is very difficult for seniors. Property taxes fall hard on seniors who want to stay in their homes for as long as they can but see their property taxes increasing continually while they are on fixed incomes. Jay says many older folks bought their homes years ago when prices and taxes were low, but as the years go by, their assessments and taxes have doubled, tripled, or more. Jay says, secondly, New Hampshire has an income tax on interest and dividends, which falls heavily on the savings, which seniors have been accumulating their whole lives. So, Doug, talking about, you know, some of the, you throw the tough one to me, talking about some of the financial struggles that New Hampshire's seniors in particular have.
No, that's absolutely correct. I mean, property taxes are always an issue that are raised, and the interest and dividends tax as well. I mean, many people say that that's in effect an income tax on people who depend on interest and dividends income. You know, the truth of the matter is our tax structure is the way it is, and it has been that way for a long time, and it's been a very difficult discussion to do much about it. There are some exemptions available for older people and for people with disabilities.
For low-income seniors. Low-income, at the
right.
local level.
And they've got to be, and honestly, you've got to be pretty low-income. So it is not particularly helpful for a lot of people, because for a lot of people, you know, when you're middle class, you think of yourself as not being able to afford some of these taxes. So we recognize that, and there haven't been good solutions up to this point.
Well, last question, I think, for you, Wendy. So what happens once all these public meetings are done? You're just getting started here.
Well, we're going to take the next 6 months after the holidays, including the results of our survey. We have over 500 surveys filled out already online, and that kicked off 2 weeks ago. So we're really excited for the results of this over the next couple of months. And we plan to incorporate all of the information from the surveys and the listening sessions into our plan and into a communication plan that would be outreaching over the spring.
So
and summer.
Who sees, who knows what's going to bubble up from these community listening sessions. And again, I want to remind everybody that we've got the schedule on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. And if you don't have internet access, again, as some older folks do not, that service link number that was mentioned earlier is 866-634-9412. I want to thank everyone for being here very much. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.